So my name is Holly Garnett. I'm a graduate education assistant at SkillSets. I'm also a PhD candidate in political science, so I'm a graduate student like you. And today I'll be co-facilitating this with Alistair.
Hi, I'm Alistair Hibbert. I'm a master's student in educational leadership.
Great. So we'll start off by telling you a little bit about what we're going to do today and what our goals are for this workshop. So we're talking about designing and delivering effective lectures. And our goals today is really to become familiar with the principle of learner-centered lectures. So we want to center our lectures around the people that we are teaching. So we're going to talk about a few different strategies that you can use to design your lectures. And then we're also going to have some active learning activities that are going to help you think about how these strategies might be implemented in your own classroom. So we're going to start off with some clicker questions.
All right. So. Everybody's got a clicker, right? Okay, so we're going to start off with what faculty are you from? So just there should be the options 1 to 10 on your clicker. Have you launched it yet, Chloe?
It's launched now, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so you can go ahead and click. Yeah?
Yeah, so your clicker those are should all automatically be on. Just give it one press.
We'll bring up the graph in a second.
Yeah, we have 62 responses. I think there's more than that in here. Okay. Oh my.
Okay, so we've got a lot from arts and religions, a few from music, management, library, and law. Okay, we won't forget about you, don't worry. So it looks like we've got a good spread, heavily in the arts though. All right.
And we like to start off with these sorts of questions so that we can get a sense of who our audience is, right? So when you're designing a lecture, you want to know who is it that you're teaching. Maybe in your own lectures, it might be a mandatory course or it might be an optional course. So it's good to get a sense of where your students are coming from. So let's move to another question.
All right, so how much teaching experience do you have? None, a little bit, ran some tutorials, taught a lecture or two. What do we got?
Still missing a few. All right.
Okay, so we've got a fair amount of people who have ran some tutorials. We've got a few experts in here, so that'll be great. Hopefully we still have stuff to teach you, even though you've taught multiple courses. But it looks like we've got a good spread here, so that's good, because we're going to do a fair amount of discussion amongst all of us. So we'll be able to get a lot of different perspectives, people who don't have very much experience or who may not be as confident in teaching, and people who seem to really kind of know what they're doing, as well as us up here to help out. Now, how confident are you in your ability to teach these lectures and tutorials? So you could have experience teaching multiple courses, but you could be pretty nervous about it. Of course, you could have not taught at all, but still think you're a rock star.
All right.
All right, excellent.
A normal distribution.
Great. So, yeah, perfect. We've got a perfect normal curve here, which is great. Nobody thinks they're a rock star, so everybody should be in this room then. That's good. This is good. So we have a lot of people who are kind of hovering around the middle then. So we'll get a broad range of perspectives here. I like this.
Good.
And so what do you feel is your biggest challenge for you in designing and delivering a lecture? Is it your audience? What topics to include? How to engage your participants? Having enough time to prepare, using technology effectively, improving for the future, or something else?
Oh, let me just keep going up. All right.
What do we got? So mostly it's engaging participants. Well, that's perfect, because this is what we're going to be talking about mostly today, is how to have learner-centered lectures, and those are typically trying to engage the students more and really get them active in their learning, which we're going to be talking about. Now, I'm curious, there were a few people who said something else. Does anybody want to offer up? Anyone who said something else, offer up what it was that wasn't covered? Yeah.
Taking something that's like a core subject that might be considered dry, like, I don't know, stats, research methods, and making that interesting. So it's along the line of engaging participants, but how do you take something like that and use some of these learner-centered principles?
Okay.
Sort of
All right, well, hopefully we'll offer you a few options here. We're going to talk about quite a few different ones as well as with a handout that has a lot of different ideas of how to make courses more interesting. If we don't cover them, though, I've taken some fantastic stats and research methods courses, so we can always talk afterwards. I had some great professors for those. Yeah? Okay, so. Yeah, sometimes you can have students who kind of give a question that throw you off topic, and you're not really sure how to respond, whether you should go off on the tangent. Okay, we'll try and cover some of that. Yes.
Navigating political sensitivities when you're teaching some a politically sensitive topic in another country or something like that.
Yes, that can be very difficult, especially when we come from such a diverse community. There can be different cultures and backgrounds that you're not familiar with, or you're not sure how to broach subjects that can be a bit more sensitive. We don't totally cover that exactly in this workshop. I don't know if there are ones today that cover it.
Not that I know of, but that's a really good idea and something that we'll look into developing for the future. So yeah. Thank you for suggesting that.
Yes, one more.
So how do you actually strike a balance between making a course interesting and making sure that students are not lost?
Okay, so trying to keep it interesting, but also keeping them focused on the topic. Okay, so we're going to try and talk about how to keep them focused. We'll talk about that a bit today, and hopefully students aren't getting lost. It can be easy to get lost sometimes in engaging activities, but hopefully we'll help you cover that and how to stay focused.
And if I may, I just remembered, we do offer the Safer Spaces workshops, and there are ones that are about understanding discrimination, understanding race and cultural diversity. So those might be a good option if you want to learn more about how to include these sensitive topics within your classroom. So there, we do actually have one, yeah.
Oh, one more, yeah. That's very important. And I think that kind of goes into knowing your audience, whether you're giving knowledge that's too specialized for your audience or whether it's too easy for them. We're going to talk about that a bit, about how to get to know your audience later on. Okay, anything else? Yeah?
So I just selected using technology efficiently or effectively, just so that it doesn't become a distraction when you're trying to use it. So I guess it ties in with engaging participants, but using it in a way that is actually aiding learning rather than distracting from it.
Right. One of the ways I find in doing that is trying to come in very prepared with your technology, right? Knowing exactly how to use it and yourself, making sure that you aren't getting distracted or you're confused on how to use it and trying to be fully aware of what the capabilities of the technology are. But yeah, it's also kind of easy to let it go out of hand because it's kind of hard to control right now. We don't always know what students are going to do when you hand them technology. But that's a good point, so we'll try and speak to that. Oh, yes, one more.
Mm-hmm. How do you know where you stand with respect to
the
students, and how can you?
Yeah. So the question was, how can you get feedback from the students when you're only partway through the course, and you don't get feedback from them yet? You don't get feedback until the end. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. But one way that I might suggest is simply just asking your students. Like you may not have formal feedback through your department, but you could always try and send out an informal email or questionnaire or hand them something at the beginning of class or end of class and ask them to submit it anonymously and get feedback like that. But we'll talk about that a bit more as well. I think we should move on to the next get to know you question. Oh no, that was the last one.
Yeah. So one of the things that we emphasize is always providing your students with some sort of an agenda for every lecture so they know where they're at. So it's not any sort of confusing mystery about what's going to get covered. So this is our agenda today. We've done introductions, check. We're going to talk next a little bit about thinking about learner outcomes, so this learner-centered principle. Then we're going to talk about knowing the context, knowing the audience and the environment. And then we're going to go a bit into the nuts and bolts of actually preparing a lecture or a tutorial.
Okay, so we're talking about learner-centered lectures. So there are four kind of main components to learning in any class, and so I'm gonna cover those briefly, and then we're gonna focus more on two of them. So first off, there's the content in your class, and this is really what you're covering in the course. So what it is that you're actually teaching, the units or the modules, or what topics you're actually talking about with your students. And this is very directly related to your learning outcomes. And this is one of the most important things that we're gonna talk about today, is what are your learning outcomes for your course? These are kind of the skills, the knowledge or the attitudes and values that you want your students to leave with by the end of your course. Okay? And it's very important to know your learning outcomes, because this is going to determine how you assess your students, because you want to make sure you're assessing them appropriately. So if you want them to know certain skills, maybe you'll assess them with a lab test, or if you want them to have good presentation skills by the end, then you'll make them do presentations in classes. You're not going to have them write an essay about how to give a good presentation, right? Things like that. So make sure that your assessments are really related to your learning outcomes. And once you've decided on what your content's going to be, your outcomes and your assessments, you can start to think about what strategies you're going to use. And that's the other main point that we're going to focus on today, is what strategies you're going to use to give learner-centered lectures. And I keep saying lectures, but this can also apply to tutorials, seminars, labs, workshops. However it is that you're teaching anyone, these skills can apply across all scenarios. And so different learning strategies could be, are you going to do just straight lectures? Are you going to do little activities? We'll do a few of them today, and you'll get an idea for what those different strategies are. So you can see that all of these are pretty connected, but we're going to focus just on outcomes and strategies right now. So as I kind of touched on before, the outcomes are the different skills, knowledge, attitudes, and values that you want your students to leave with at the end of the course. So if you remember at the beginning of this workshop, Holly just said right before I started, was that our goals for this workshop are that we talk about different learner-centered lectures. What are the principles underlying these learner-centered strategies? What are some of these strategies? And how can you implement these strategies, or which ones seem easiest for you to use? So those are our goals or our outcomes for this workshop in particular. And it's important for you to understand what those are for your classes as well and for your students. So why use learning outcomes? I've kind of touched on this a little bit, but I'm wondering if anybody can offer up to me why learning outcomes might be important to have in your course syllabus, or to tell your students what the learning outcomes are. Yeah, it's a benchmark for the students, so they kind of know where they should be headed. Okay. Yes? So you as an instructor or as a student?
As a student.
So as a student, you go back to the learning outcomes because you know that's the whole point of the course, so you make sure you know those. Okay. Anybody else? Yes?
As an instructor, it gives you a guideline so you reach your goal till the end of the class, your 15 weeks of class or something.
Right. So as an instructor, it gives you the guideline or a sort of pathway that you're going to follow. It keeps you on track, right? Anything else anybody would like to say? Yes, in the back. So, it's motivation?
Yeah.
To.
So, if I'm specialized in something and I'm taking a course and I want to learn, for example, how this software works or how to do such kind of problems.
Okay, so it kind of sets a goal for you and you make sure that you get there with your students? Is that what you're saying?
Motivation.
Oh, as a student. Yeah, as a student, it also sets the motivation. Okay. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Here, when you're outcomes focused, you can focus on, you can use different techniques.
Yeah, very much so. So if you're talking about just what content you're going to teach, you're kind of stuck in that content. But if you talk about what your general outcomes are, they can be a bit more broad, and you can change up your content partway through. For instance, maybe something happens in the real world outside of school that is something really relevant to your course. Now you can switch out one lecture for another. And incorporate that new content, still getting towards the same learning outcome. Yeah? Anything else anybody wants to say? Oh, yeah?
Well, it helps give the overarching context in the construction of sense of whatever's being said in the course. If every instructor says it, if there's an outcome that's kept in mind, the person can think, how is that related to the outcome at any given moment?
Exactly. So you can always relate what the professor is saying and doing back to the learning outcome. Okay? Exactly, the assessments and all the work and all the assignments and everything, right? As I mentioned, the assessments tie in with the outcomes. All right, I think that covers basically everything that I wanted to make sure we talked about for learning outcomes and why they're important. So for instructors, it's about guiding your content. Are you going to keep the same content? Do you want to switch it up partway through? What strategies are you going to use to teach, and what assessments are most appropriate according to your learning outcomes? And for the students, it makes the instructor's expectations explicit, it makes them very clear, and it also gives the students something to go back to make sure that they understand all these learning outcomes. Say if they're going into a midterm or a final exam, it gives them something to focus on. So Useful learning outcomes. How do you make your learning outcomes useful for your students and useful for yourself? So first off, you want them to be focused on student learning. You don't want them to be focused on you. I know we have some experienced teachers here, but for some people who are less experienced, personally, I found when I first went to teach that I was worried about me. I wasn't, like, I wanted my students to learn, but I was worried about, am I conveying the knowledge properly? Am I teaching as best I can? But I wouldn't want my learning outcome to be focused on, oh, I will convey the knowledge to you. The learning outcome needs to be, are the students learning? Are they taking it in? You could be saying something as profound as you, like the most profound thing you think, but if it's not engaging the students, then it's completely lost on them. So you want your learning outcomes to be focused on the students and on their learning. You want them to be clear and concise, so you want it to be easy for everyone to understand and easy to remember. You want it to be measurable so that you can assess it, and you want it to be achievable so that it's something that you can actually do in your 12 weeks, 15 weeks, or one day, however long your course or workshop or seminar may be. Oh, I've already moved on to the next. Okay, so is this a good learning outcome? Now that we've talked about what makes a good learning outcome, I want to, if you all have your clickers still with you, you can press 1 for yes or 2 for no. Is this a good learning outcome? The primary goal of this course is to convey an understanding of the basic principles of accounting. So think about it. Yes or no? All right, so we've got a bit of a split. People are leaning a bit more towards no, but there's clearly a bit of, we've got some differing opinions here. So I'm going to ask you to turn to the people next to you in groups of 2, 3, or 4, whatever's convenient for you. Just turn to someone next to you and talk about why you think yes or no. Why do you think it's a good learning outcome? Why do you think it's not a good learning outcome? Oh, thank you. So I think everybody's had a chance to speak with their partners and get a better idea of whether they think this is or is not a good learning outcome. So does anybody want to offer up what they talked about with their partners, whether they think it's good or not. Yes?
We think it's a broad like objective, broad outcomes, like principle, basic principles of accounting. If you know them, then you're eligible to be graduating from accounting, not taking a specific course in accounting.
Right. So you're saying it's kind of broad, basic principles of accounting. What is that exactly, right? That doesn't really tell you exactly what you're going for. Did other people think that? Yeah? No? Did anybody disagree? Or yes?
We agree that it might be a very broad learning outcome, but at the same time, we try to think as well that this could be a very basic course on someone that has never done any accounting, and perhaps it's also good that the learning outcome shouldn't be too ambitious, in the sense that if you're presenting a completely new field to a person, I would prefer to have a very basic understanding of principles that later on in other courses would be
would be useful.
Much more specific.
Okay.
But for this one, that's why there was kind of a...
Yeah, it's sort of hard to know without knowing what level of accounting course this is for, whether it's introductory or more advanced. Okay, so, but if you're a student and this is the learning outcome, do you think, and you see its basic principles, do you have any idea like what those basic principles are? Do you think maybe you might look at that 6 weeks into the course and you're like, I don't know what the basic principles are, and think like, how do I find them? Do you get what I'm saying? Sorry?
Lectures, things that would build on for us the basic principles. So that would be the goal of the course, and we would see that in the weekly lecture.
Okay, so maybe if that term basic principles was used frequently throughout the course,
if that's the overall goal of the course, then that's the framework for the lecture.
Okay.
For me, that's how I would read that.
Okay, so it could be quite specific if you know that basic principles is going to be a big, like something that you're going to talk about throughout the entire course, and it's something you go back to.
But that's what it said. It says the primary goal of this course is to convey an understanding of the basic principles of accounting.
Right. So that's the primary goal. Okay, but do you feel like to convey an understanding of the basic principles, do you feel like basic principles is getting at the right idea? You think it's specific enough, or is it clear?
So again, if we're talking about not being contained by content and focusing on outcome, I think it would be, the outcome would be what we learn from the weekly lectures.
Okay, so you think it's good to not, that it's staying a bit broad and not specifying the content yet.
I think that can be the only outcome. I think that if that's the primary goal, that's, you know, as someone said above, that's the overarching goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe in the weekly lectures, we would see more of, like, this is what we're going to learn.
Right.
This is one of the basic principles, or et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so this could be a learning outcome that's in the syllabus at the beginning, and everybody understands that's the overall theme.
Sure.
But for each course, or sorry, for each class, there's maybe a more specific instructional goal. Yeah, okay. In education, that's kind of how we differentiate it. The learning outcome is for the whole course, and the instructional goal is for a specific class. Yeah?
In our group, we've discussed about how this outcome is focused on the instructor and not on the students,
mm-hmm.
because of the word convey. Because this gives us how the instructor will have to give the information, and not about how the students is supposed to learn and understand those basics.
Right, so it's talking about conveying an understanding, which is, conveying is kind of something that the instructor does. So what word could we put there in place, or how could we rephrase this to make it more learner-centered instead of conveying the knowledge, convey an understanding? Yes?
Develop or foster.
Develop or foster, yeah, I agree. Both of those words would work very well. So if you're going to develop an understanding, that's action on the student's part. Or to foster... I think foster could still be sort of focused on the instructor. That's more focusing on what the instructor is doing, I think. But develop, I think that requires, put some action on the students. Yes?
Just because the word understanding is a bit a vague term. If you want to measure something after that, kind of to grasp what you mean by that.
Okay, so understanding is a bit too vague. It's not totally saying what the students... Yeah, yeah, so understanding could be very shallow or it could be very deep. Okay, do people agree?
Yeah.
Yeah? So how could we make that a bit more specific? Is there another word we should use instead of understanding? Or
apply, maybe the word apply.
Apply, so... Okay, perhaps an understanding of how to apply the basic, okay. To reconcile? Okay, so it's hard to reconcile the broadness and the concise or the specificity or right. So you don't want your outcome to just convey. Is that what you're saying? Sorry.
Well, an outcome would be clearer if there was more specified.
Okay, so it needs to be a bit more specified in what it's saying.
If it's an outcome.
Okay. And so specified in the sense that it needs to specify what the understanding is or specify what the basic principles are or just it just needs a bit more. What's going to be covered? So it needs to address the content a little bit more.
Basic principles could be too many things for one to have a clear idea.
Okay, so basic principles could be a bit too broad. It could if the whole course is on basic principles, then what are those basic principles? Can you break it into a few categories to make it a bit simpler or a bit more specific? What do people think about that? Should it try to be a bit more specific or should it stay this broad? Based on what we've talked about.
More specific?
A bit more specific? Okay. Because we had some people saying that it should stay broad. So I'm curious what you all think. Yes? Oh, yeah?
If the outcomes are shared the first day of class when the syllabus is discussed,
mm-hmm. So as a student, you might want to hear early on more about what you're going to be...
Yes, a basic principle, let's say, is to, handle a balance sheet. You would understand how to handle a balance sheet. You would know how to manage your assets.
Okay, so you could make it a bit more broad by talking about balancing your assets and things like... or balancing your sheets and everything. Would you want that to be something that you talk about in your first lecture? Many professors will start... or instructors will start by going through their learning outcomes and talking about what they are. So would you want to keep your learning outcome like this and then just explain it more in your lecture? Or would you want it to be more explained in your syllabus? Do you think your students will remember what you said in that first class and be able to come back to it?
No.
Not quite, right? It might be hard for them to remember. Yes?
I think the distinction you made earlier was very useful, that you provide this maybe even if it's a broad statement, but then you mentioned something about instructional, like the
instructional goal of each class. Yeah.
Discussing that so the students can see how the different lectures would build up in serving and fulfilling this overall.
Okay. So one way you might want to do that is you could say this is maybe a broad learning outcome, but you could have maybe bullet points underneath and say we'll have courses discussing how to balance your sheets or courses discussing other aspects of accounting. You can clearly tell I know a lot about accounting. But is that what you're getting at?
Yeah.
Okay. Does everybody agree with that? So it can start off a bit broad, maybe have another point or two underneath to get a bit more specific? Okay. So you can see it's a little bit hard to decide on exactly how to define your learning outcome. It takes a bit of work to figure out how exactly you want to define this. But it's important to remember when you're looking at your learning outcome and you're kind of critiquing it on your own is whether it's student-focused or learner-oriented. So like we said earlier, you want it to be about developing the understanding rather than conveying it. Is it measurable? So we talked about how would you measure these basic principles or how would you measure this understanding? If it's an applied understanding, then you can measure how well they complete assignments or projects. Is it achievable? Can you cover all of these basic principles in your 12 weeks or however long your course is? And is it clear and concise? And so as we went over with that one, it was fairly concise but not totally clear. So it might be okay to make it a bit longer just to make it a bit more clear, or have bullet points underneath to make it a bit more clear. And when you're developing these learning outcomes, it's very important to make sure that it's appropriate to your students. So your context matters. So when it comes to understanding the context, you need to think about who are your students, or who's your audience. And that's the first part of your context. And the second part is what is your class size in your location? What environment are you working in? And once you have a better idea of what context you're working in, you can start to think about what strategies you're going to use to achieve your outcomes, right? So we're using these strategies to achieve those outcomes we were just talking about. So to talk about context, we're going to first go over a little bit of watch this little video about speaking to the right audience. So this is a Monty Python skit about an architect. John Cleese is going to come in and pitch an idea to three businessmen who are trying to build an apartment complex.
That must be the first architect now.
Can you all hear?
Oh, yes, it's Mr. Wiggin of Ironside and Malone. Good morning, gentlemen. This is a 12-story block combining classical neo-Georgian features with all the advantages of modern design. The tenants arrive in the entrance hall here, are carried along the corridor on a conveyor belt in extreme comfort, and pass murals depicting Mediterranean scenes towards the rotating knives. The last 20 feet of the corridor are heavily soundproof. The blood pours down these chutes, and the flesh slurps into these large...
Excuse me. Did you say knives?
Rotating knives, yes.
Are you proposing to slaughter our tenants?
Does that not fit in with your plans?
If you couldn't already tell, it goes on to reveal that he's designed slaughterhouses primarily. So, as you can tell from that, it's very important to know your audience, know who you're speaking to. So there are a few different ways in which your students may differ. For instance, what are their possible motivations for taking this course? Are they taking it because it's mandatory for the program? Are they taking it because they think it just might be easy? Or are they taking it because they're just really interested in the subject, even though it has nothing to do with their major? So what are their motivations for taking the course? What are their expectations about the course? Do they think it's going to be hard? Do they think it's going to be easy? Do they think it's going to take up a lot of the time? Do they think that they're not going to have to do the readings? What are their expectations? What are their prior knowledge and experiences? This speaks to both content as well as life experience. So have they taken prerequisite courses? Or did they study this sort of thing in high school if you're teaching an introductory course? What prior knowledge do they have, or what experiences have they had? Are they all coming from pretty similar backgrounds, or are they coming from all across the world like they typically are in a university setting? Oh, and as well, what barriers to learning might they experience? So these barriers can range from something as simple as content knowledge. Like I said, they may not have basic content that you were relying on them to have. They may not have taken certain courses in high school that you assumed they would. What other barriers to learning may just be learning disabilities or trouble reading or trouble... some people have a fear of speaking out in a lecture hall. I know certainly in my undergrad I did not want to speak in a lecture hall this big, so look at me now. But there are certain barriers, that there are certain things that students might not be comfortable with. So if you want to have a class discussion this big, there might be a lot of students who are too timid to do that. Other barriers are also, there could just be ones with the actual classroom itself. It could be hard for your students to hear you if you speak softly, or if it's a really big lecture hall, it could be hard for them to hear you. It could also be hard for them to see if you don't have the lighting right or your screen's not working. So think about all these different barriers that your students might be encountering in your classroom. But now that you know that there's all these different ways in which your students can differ, how can you get this information from your students? Yes? Yeah? Okay.
To know them and know what they want from the class and who they are.
Okay, so sort of starting a discussion in the first class about...
It can be in the class, and the first class is a good way, but I think a professor has to be in the class before he gives it, so maybe 5 or 10 minutes before the class,
mm-hmm.
And he can stay after the class with some students who want to talk.
Okay, so talk with some of the students more one-on-one or in small groups.
Exactly.
Okay, so walk around the class or talk to a few students after class. Okay, yes?
You can use online applications that you can do right in class where the students can pull out their cell phone or their laptop and you put the question up similar to what you did and then their responses pop up and you can have a conversation there about their various expectations and motivations.
Okay, so you can leverage some technology to do some questionnaires either through an email or an online app before the class started, or doing clickers in the beginning class, just like we did here today. Yes?
I believe there are two ways to transmit knowledge. One is to propose a topic, as we do, and another is to ask the people to share their knowledge and build on it.
Okay. Okay, so discuss with your students what they think effective learning is, and so everybody's on the same page.
And then you can build on it and maybe bring an expertise afterwards.
That's a great idea. So ask them what their expectations are for learning or for engaged learning. What you can ask your students how they learn best. Did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I feel it might be better to do like some kind of anonymous surveys at the very beginning of the course, or when you're introducing the learning outcome. And at the end of the session, maybe like ask them to do the same survey to see if any of those answers have changed so far throughout the semester.
Okay, so you
experience the next semester.
Sort of like a pretest and a post-test. You can ask students what they think going into the course, ask them about themselves and about what they think learning is and everything. You can also ask them by the end of the course if that's changed. Yeah, so an anonymous survey might be the best way because I don't know if everybody can remember their first year of undergrad, but what that was like. You're probably a bit more timid than you are these days about speaking out in a lecture hall. Like I said, I know I definitely was, didn't speak in undergrad at all. Yes? Okay. So it's good to get a bit more specific with these questions and get some more in-depth knowledge about your students. And it can vary between subjects, so you can't assume that one class that you're teaching in physics is going to be the same as a class you're teaching in biology or something like that. The students might have different backgrounds, sort of thing, different prerequisite courses and everything. So that's good. It seems like we have a good idea of how your audience can differ and how to get some of that information from them. So now that we know the first part of the context, your audience, we're going to talk about the second part, which is your class size and your location. So as you can see, there's a variety of different classrooms that we have here at McGill and at all different universities. There's labs and there's small tutorial rooms and there's big lecture halls. This one's not that big, but and then there's seminar rooms that are, you know, more set up for discussion. So it's a good idea to get a sense of what classroom you're going to be teaching in. Definitely a great idea to go before your first class. If there's an opportunity to go check out the room, maybe if you're going to be using technology, make sure you understand how all that works by either going, you know, a few days before your first class or showing up 20 minutes early or something to familiarize yourself with the room. It also makes you a lot more comfortable if you can kind of envision where you're going to be teaching. Personally, for me, I know that helps for any kind of stressful situation, whether it's teaching for the first time or writing an exam or giving a presentation. It's good to know what context you're going to be in before you jump in. And once you know what kind of room you're working in, you can think about all the different ways that you can teach in that classroom. So is it set up for big debates or discussions? Can you rearrange the desk? Is it easy for students to sort of move around and form groups like this? Like in that tutorial room I showed earlier, all those desks were movable. It's easier to change up the discussion. Is there technology available to you? You can also think outside of the classroom. Can you use the hallways outside if you want to break off into group discussions so it doesn't get too loud in the room? Are there other classrooms within the building that you can go use or your students can use when you break off into those discussions? As well as, are there just other, if you want to do like sort of like a guest lecture or something, or you want your students to learn about library services, you can go to the library and do a lecture there with one of the librarians, or a workshop it would be. So be sure to think outside the box and how you can, what your classroom means and how your classroom is going to influence the ways that you can teach. And once you know who your audience is, and your context, and you know your learning outcomes, you can use all of this. Oh, is this going to work? Yeah. So you can use all this to start thinking about your learning. So how do you learn best? I want to hear from some of you. What conditions make it so that you can learn better, or where are you most comfortable learning? When do you feel like you're learning most efficiently, or what helps you to learn? Yes? Talking with other people, working through the problem. Yes?
Teaching?
Yeah, teaching the subject yourself really helps you get a grasp of the topic. You really kind of have to know it if you're going to teach it to someone else. Any other ideas before I reveal my own answers? Yes?
Having something to read before you come to class or to come to a discussion.
Okay, so being able to go in prepared.
Yes.
And already kind of know it a bit yourself before you go in and have someone else tell you about it. Okay, so these are covering a few of the different points that I want to hit. So learners tend to create knowledge actively and uniquely, and they learn best when they're able to connect with the new knowledge to existing knowledge. So if you do a reading before class, you've already got a bit of existing knowledge, and you're going to be familiar with those topics when you go in, and anything new that the professor or any classmates give to you, you're going to be able to connect that to what you already know. When you focus students' attention on their learning experience, this is a great way to use your learning outcomes or your instructional goals for each class. You want to be able to focus on the learning experience. Receiving appropriate feedback early and often. This one, I think, is one of the most important ones, because typically a lot of feedback just comes back in, you know, an A or 75% or 15 out of 20. Whatever, it often comes back in marks, and that is really not feedback at all. It doesn't tell you what you did right, what you did wrong. If you wrote a 20-page essay or lab report and you just get a 75%, that tells you nothing about where you went wrong or where you could have corrected it, where your explanations were weak, or how you can critique your arguments. So feedback is really the most important thing, in my opinion, to improve learning. As well as you need to work on engaging collaborative experiences, and that's what we're going to do right now with Holly. And the last that I want to leave you with is that learning is not a spectator sport. You have to get involved.
Am I on?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. So now I'm going to go through some of the building blocks that are going to come into your lecture. So we've talked a lot about the theory behind what you want to convey, what your objectives are. So how do you actually put that into a one-hour lecture or into a three-hour lecture, depending on how long your course is? All right, so again, we're going to use a bit of a diagram to help us understand the basic building blocks of a learner-centered lecture. So the first part is going to be introducing and orienting. You want to build some curiosity among your students. You want to make them start thinking about the topic. We're going to go through each of these steps in a little bit, but I'll start off just by giving you a bit of a sense of what each of them is going to be. So we have introducing and orienting. Then there's going to be a period of informing. So this is when you're going to present that information. And so the question, of course, is going to become, how do you do that? So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Then you're going to want to include lots of opportunities for practice and for feedback. So some of that's going to happen within the classroom, some of that's going to happen outside of the classroom. And today we're going to give you a few different ideas of strategies that you can use in order to give your students opportunities for practice and feedback. And then finally, you always want to end your session with a bit of an opportunity for reflection, to think about what they've learned and how they might apply it in their assignments or in the next class that you'll be giving them. It's something we often forget to leave time for. So together, that's kind of the circle of how the students are going to learn throughout the lecture and then throughout the course. So let's go through each of these in a little bit more detail. One of the ways that we like to understand this is that each of these components are building blocks. So you're going to build your lecture using these blocks. So you can see on this axis right here, we have time. So this is the time in your lecture. It might be an hour, it might be 3 hours. You'll have to kind of know your context for that. And now, moving up along this vertical axis is how much you're putting in and how much the students are putting in. Ideally, you want both to be happening, but some of it is going to be more student-focused learning and student-directed learning, and some of it's going to be more professor-directed learning or TA-directed learning. So here at the beginning, when you're introducing and you're orienting, that has to be very student-directed learning. The students need to be reflecting. They need to be building their own curiosity. And so your role is to provide an opportunity for them to do that. The informing section is going to be a lot more professor-directed. You're going to direct them through the content. That's why you're there, right? You know a lot about this subject, you're doing your PhD in it, or you have a PhD in it, and so it's going to be your opportunity to convey this information. Now, you'll notice the triangle here. This is the active learning phase, and so we have a whole workshop this afternoon. Come back this afternoon, you'll learn all about active learning. But this is the triangle, and so you'll notice that initially it really needs to be professor-directed. You need to launch them into this activity or this opportunity for practice and feedback. You need to give them direction, show them what to do. But over the time that you're using doing these active learning activities or this practice and feedback, it's going to become very student-directed learning. So they're going to be the ones who are going to be directing their learning, doing the research, learning with their peers, learning from each other. And then finally, the closure and reflection. Again, that needs to be something that the students are taking on and directing themselves. They need to think about, what have I learned? How can I apply it? How can I apply this to my life or my assignments? And that's going to be, again, like a lot more student-focused. So what if your lecture looked like this? What would you say is going on here in this chart? Everyone's sleeping. Why do you say that?
I daydream, if that's the case.
Okay. So what is it? Okay, so you might be referring to this giant block of informing. And you're saying if you were the student, you'd be sleeping. Okay, yeah?
Plus, like informing is that long, there's a huge amount of information you're receiving in a short amount of time.
Absolutely. If there's that much informing going on, no way you're going to actually absorb it. Yes?
I feel that people are a bit negative about that. If you have an introduction lecture, and that's the first time people talk about something, mm-hmm. This is totally fine. Basically, giving them an introduction, they don't have anything to contribute at that point, and you can mm-hmm. learn from that by just listening.
Okay, in some cases that might be appropriate, but I think what we're trying to get you to think about is the informing section is very much the part where you're talking to the students. And we know that students can learn in a lot of different ways, and just by listening might not be the best way to always learn. So even if you're conveying some content for part of the lecture, it's important to remember that students learn in a variety of ways, whether it be sitting and listening, but also doing readings, doing activities, right? So those activities might be a conduit to learning that information as well. But we're going to talk about a few different ways that that informing section can be interspersed with activities that are able to help students learn as well. Okay. Yeah.
Can also somehow help retaining that information and making the class more dynamic.
Mm-hmm. So kind of including more red triangles between the informing blocks. So if you need to do a giant informing block because they're brand new to it, including a few more red triangles, meaning active learning opportunities. Does anybody want to tackle why the triangle looks the way it does? Yeah.
Try to engage in the discussion, but
it will take a long time, so the all the class is engaging in it,
mm-hmm.
and so because you have such a big block of information, mm-hmm. then maybe you'll reach 3 or 4 students and not mm-hmm. the whole class.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to talk about this more in the afternoon if you're in the active learning session. But you, when you're using active learning, you don't want to kind of just drop an activity on them and say, okay, go do your thing now, right? So just like you were mentioning up here that, you know, you're the professor. You're supposed to do some informing. So here what is happening is that you're kind of dropping an activity on them, and they have no sense of what's going on, no clear sense of purpose or instructions. And so then eventually you have to pull up the slack. So we would definitely recommend this model over this model here. Okay, so I'm afraid because we have lots of other things to do in this lecture, I'll leave those questions for now, but we'll have some time for you to discuss in your groups about strategies for active learning. All right, so let's talk about some nuts and bolts. So your introducing section. One, provide an agenda like we did. Like I said earlier, your class shouldn't be a giant mystery. Students should be able to know what's going to happen during the class, and that will help them structure their own learning. It'll help them structure their notes, and that can be really helpful. State your learning outcome or your instructional goals. Again, shouldn't be a mystery. We've talked a lot about why learning outcomes are important, and so state them outright. You might want to review your last lesson. Do so quickly, though. You don't want to turn your lecture into a recap of what your last lecture had been, especially here where we usually only have maybe 12 lectures in a semester. So you really have to be quite precious with your time. So it might be worthwhile recapping a few of the points that might be coming up within the lecture, but then moving on. Find out what your students already know. We did this today. We wanted to know how much you already were comfortable with designing lectures and with teaching. So using clickers might be a good option to do that. And then really important is to have a hook. And so there are a variety of different ways that you can have this hook and build student curiosity and build student motivation. Here are two suggestions that I've used. One is to show students the big picture. So I'm in political science. So sometimes I like to start off with a contemporary example of something that's going on in the world. Here's the big picture of why we have to learn about, say, electoral systems. You know, let's talk about the election that just happened. So kind of opening it up to the broad picture might be a good hook to pull them in. Somebody had mentioned teaching stats classes. I think that's a really useful method, is saying, look at what's going on in the world, maybe an election. Okay, here's why we might be interested in learning about survey data or polling, for example. And the other thing that I like to do is frame the lecture as one central question, one guiding question that can kind of pique the student's curiosity. I actually even put that right in the syllabus so that when they're doing their readings, they're able to think and be motivated by that one central question. If you start off and say, here's our question today, and by the end of the class, we're going to try to answer this question or at least have a better understanding of it, it might help to motivate them and make them a little more curious. And then, of course, we get the informing section. So one thing that I would suggest is to only include 3 or 4 main points. Don't clutter your lecture. And again, thinking through your learning objectives is going to be really crucial in order to pull out those 3 or 4 main points. It'll obviously depend on how long your lecture is going to be, but it's really helpful not to overwhelm students and think of how you can structure your lecture into a few main points that you really want them to come out with. Design your lecture in blocks, so using those building blocks. So the chart that we showed you earlier might be for, like, say, a 1-hour lecture. But if you have a 3-hour lecture, think about the different usage of those blocks that you can use. Most, even adults, have very low attention spans. So just keep that in mind and make sure you're switching things up frequently enough. Next, know why the material is important. If you want the students to know why the material is important, then you need to know that yourself as well. And that will help motivate you in your informing section and actually make it more interesting, because if you're really curious and you're really interested in what's going on, that will definitely help. It'll also be helpful for the students when they're applying it then to their lectures or to their exams. They'll know why certain pieces of information are important to the big picture. Oh, I don't know why it's off, but reinforced learning. So if you're using this block method, one thing that was suggested to me that I find works really well is tell students what you're going to do, do it, and then tell them what you just did. So by kind of capping it in that sort of way, it doesn't become a mystery about what this is that we're doing in a lecture. It helps them know, just in case they drifted off for a few minutes or if they were a bit preoccupied, it helps bring them back into what's going on. And then finally, watch for student cues. So you can do, we talked a little bit at the beginning, somebody had mentioned, well, how do I get feedback from my students? And you can get feedback instantly by looking at them and seeing what's going on. Are they engaged? Are they, you know, looking into their computers like maybe they're doing something other than classwork? You can notice from cues. You can even tell when people start fidgeting and start shuffling their chairs. Maybe now is a time that we need to take a bit of a break and move to a different block. And over time, you'll get a sense of what some of the patterns are among your students, and you'll be able to build your lectures effectively. I think we covered all that. Good. Sorry. Yeah, we had a question. Yes.
Can you elaborate a little bit about the other blocks? Like,
yeah.
Chunks of time, mm-hmm. Ideas, is it around ideas of video content?
Yeah, so you can think of it both ways. So his question was about, tell me a little bit more about these blocks. Are we talking about by content, are we talking about by style of learning? And it can be both. So you might want to think of your lecture as, say we have three or four main points over a three-hour lecture. You might want to build those blocks with each piece of content you want and also use the triangles and the rectangles. You know, if we go back to the chart, right, we're going to use we're going to do some informing, and then we're going to have a triangle of active practice and feedback, and then we're going to have another rectangle and then another triangle. So think of it as building your blocks of your lecture. And thinking it in blocks making up a lecture will help the students be able to understand and differentiate what's going on, but it'll also help you be able to organize your lecture in a way that's going to make sense and is actually going to convey the information. Does that answer your question? Okay, cool. All right. So the practice and the feedback is sometimes the thing that's the least intuitive when we go to teaching. How do I include practice and feedback within the actual lecture? We know that the students are going to get that by doing the readings, by doing the assignments, but they should be getting that within the lectures too. So this is a principle we call active learning. Active learning is a process whereby students engage in activities, can be reading, so like doing their readings ahead of time, can be writing, so doing their papers, can be discussion, like we've had discussions here, or problem solving or applying their learning to promote analysis, synthesis, and evaluation of class content. So as I mentioned earlier, people learn in all different sorts of ways, and this is going to help enforce that learning. The question becomes, how do I do it? So we have a handout for you, and what we'd like you to do is just take a few minutes to read through some of the different options for active learning, and mark some of the strategies that you think you might be interested in using with a check mark. Just pass it down. I don't know if that's the right amount. I ran out. Do you have any extra handouts floating around? Oh, you have more. Okay. It's going to come from the other side.
Can anybody share? Some people don't
have. We're going to get some. They're coming from that side. Yeah. Anybody not have a sheet? Good. chance to read those through. We're going to do a 1-minute paper. So essentially what I'd like you to do is grab a pen and write out the answer to two questions. One, why did you choose this strategy? So one of the strategies that you've checkmarked. And how would you use this strategy? So keep reading, and when you're ready to move on to the second part of that, grab a pen and start thinking a little bit about what strategy you'd use and how you would use it. Okay, so now we're going to do one more activity, buzz groups. So in groups of two or three, talk amongst yourselves, describe the class you would like to use this activity for, and then share your strategies, and then together brainstorm some ideas you could use for implementing that. All right, so we'll give ourselves a couple more minutes and go into groups of two or three or four.
Yeah.
Just for sake of time, I don't want to disrupt these really engaged conversations that I'm seeing around the room, but just for the sake of time, we're going to have to bring it back in. Would anyone like to share one example of an active learning strategy they found interesting and how they might want to use it in their own discipline or in their own class? Thank you. Yes. The one sentence summary?
I think it's very powerful for a student to summarize what we learned in a very brief way. I can give an example of that. Like, while I was doing my undergraduate studies, we were allowed to bring only one page to our exam, where you can write anything you want.
So you got a one page cheat sheet.
You summarize like the whole course, and you got only the essence of this course and put it in one page where it's useful in the exam. Seems like it's very powerful to us because, like, we only remember what at least one page.
Right.
So if a student is able to summarize a knowledge in like a very brief way and explain how it's supposed to be, it's very powerful.
That's great. Did anyone else put down the one sentence summary as one of the strategies they thought they'd want to use? Fantastic. Yeah, it's a good one because it doesn't take very long, but it kind of forces students to think, okay, what was the main point? What should I be getting out of this? And also can reinforce that learning outcome. Thanks. Yes, did you have another example?
Awesome. We had a fun thing happen in our group in that the examples that we took had a very clear link to the fields of what we wanted to teach. For example, we had one natural sciences field that wanted to toss around a ball. You had something happening in movement. Somebody who wanted to deal with engineering who chose to classify with the items, have a hierarchy, for example, to understand building structure and which elements were more important than others. I'm more in the language and humanities. I was more drawn to the one-minute paper because it helps to articulate thought through language. But then we thought perhaps trying to teach, I don't know, some sort of history of philosophy course with tossing a ball wouldn't be as effective, but vice versa, teaching engineering through one-minute papers would not be the best, possibly.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that, because I think it really brings home that when you are choosing active learning strategies, you have to be intentional about it. It can't just be, I just really want to toss around a ball today. It needs to be very intentional, and so you need to have this process of thinking through, here are my learning outcomes, and here are some of the strategies I can use to reflect back to them. And I love that your group talked a little bit about your disciplines and how certain strategies might be more appropriate for some circumstances than for others. Thank you so much for sharing that. We have time for one more. Yes? I think this... Our sound guy might be a little more happy.
Microphone.
If you have a microphone.
I chose academic speed dating. Why? Is because I want to become I'm a French literature teacher, and I want to become a French literature teacher in a CEGEP. Mm-hmm. And in CEGEP, everybody has to take the literature class. Okay. even if you're engineering, science nature, even though you have to take it, and sometimes you don't like it. And so I thought it would be a good way to start the class in the first class and ask them to discuss about how is literature useful to them. And so they find the opinion of others and find a way to like it and to know how this class could be something good for them and to discuss about it in the first class. So.
That's a great example, and it also goes back to the comment we had earlier about how do you get students motivated about a class that might seem dry or irrelevant. Did anyone else check off the academic speed dating as an idea they wanted to use? Yeah, I'm glad to see your hand up. Yeah, sounds good. Okay, so just for the sake of time, we're going to leave it there, but maybe I'll see some of you in the afternoon. We can talk a little bit more about this. So the last component, concluding and reflecting. Too often, just like what I'm doing now, we leave this to the end for obvious reasons, but we kind of forget our timing, and this is so crucial to have time to conclude, to reflect, to think about what we've learned today. So the first thing is to summarize, and we'll be doing that in a second. So you'll want to say, here are the main points, in case you drifted off in some of the lecture, just to bring us back home to what we were trying to get across in the lecture. Encourage reflection. So you might want to go back to that hook that you started with and say, okay, did we actually answer this question? Or what would you say now about this big picture idea that I was talking about or this real world example that I was talking about? You might want to give a little teaser about what you're going to be covering next to get them back into the seats the next week. And you might want to use your material to launch into assignments and readings, because those are also active learning opportunities for students to be engaged in the assignments that they're doing and the readings that they're doing. And so that's a really good way of using that content to launch into what's going to happen during the week until you come back. And then, no surprise, we included all four components, all four building blocks in today's lecture. So we started off with introducing and orienting. We gave you the goals to the workshop. We gave you an agenda. We started with some clicker questions so that you could see, so we could see what the context was for the class, and also so you could see what your peers were coming from. We did some informing. Alistair did a mini lecture looking at learner-centered principles. We did some individual reading. We showed a video. It was for fun. And then we did some active learning. So remember at the beginning we did a think, pair, share. That was an example of active learning. We did the personal reading. We did the one-minute paper, buzz groups. We used clicker questions. And then we did some closing reflections, and that's what we're going to be doing next. So we're handing out a summary sheet. So you're going to help us build our summary. Going to give random. So you can start filling that out while you're waiting. But hold on to your sheets. Here. I think there's some coming from over there. Does anyone not have a sheet? Oh, up here? There you go. Anyone else not have one? All right, so take a minute to reflect on what we've done today. If you just write lectures, we'll generally know which workshop we're referring to. We'll be keeping them together anyway, so I don't think we'll be too worried. The information will be posted, so if you hadn't gotten a chance to copy it all down, I'm sure it's going to get posted on our website. Just hold on to your sheets. We're going to need them. So now it's your opportunity to summarize what we've learned today. My apologies if you're not quite done, but we're going to have to eyes up, please. Okay, we're going to summarize what we did today with your help. So we asked you to write down two new things you learned at this lecture. So can I get some hands? Who would like to share some two new things that we've learned today? Nobody learned anything new? Okay, yeah.
I learned a lot, so thank you. I think one of the things I wrote down, it's very general, not very specific, but it's just using the block strategies for building the lecture and how to sort of allot time and how the shapes.
Perfect, yeah. So you learned about the blocks and building those blocks together to build a lecture. Perfect. I saw a hand somewhere over here. Or not? No one on this side learned anything? Yeah?
Many of these things we are, common sense is already leading us to do roughly. It's good to learn a visual structure and terms for techniques so that you can tell yourself, okay, you should do that.
I love what you said about how some of it's very intuitive, but it's nice sometimes to have a sense of intentionality behind what might already be intuitive. So now you know why you're doing certain things, and that can even help with your students saying, oh, why do we have to do another active learning activity? You have some of intentionality behind that. So I think that's really important, for sure. Yes? Right, so you learned some new strategies that you'll be able to use in your classroom. Great. Hands over. We haven't had anyone from this side. What did you learn today? Yeah.
It's hard to give units of learning, but, for example, one sheet full of active learning strategies that are all new. Thank you. And the diagram that was one unit of learning, thinking of a lesson in the diagram spread over time where the things can move around. Well, the shape of the diagram was very good.
Mm-hmm. So you found the building blocks and the active learning activities quite useful.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Yes?
Also from the sharing of other people about the active learning strategies, like you can see the different contexts, because maybe you choose one particular active learning strategies for your course, but then you realize that other ones are also good in different contexts or at different times. So it's really like you learn from other people's experience.
Fantastic, yeah. So being able to share and learn about different contexts where this can be used, that's great. So what we wanted to share with you today is very much those ideas and how that all relates to having learner-focused lectures. And hopefully you'll be able to apply these sorts of activities in the future. So thank you very much. If you have any other questions, comments, concerns, we'll hang around for a little bit. And you can check out the TLS website, which has lots of great resources. What we're going to ask you to do is hand in your clickers and your evaluation forms. There should be a student volunteer at the door who will be able to help you with that. And lunch is next. So see you in the afternoon. Thanks.